stiff arm. Gore cuts it inside. Frank Gore is still going. Touchdown, San Francisco.
Two from the 40, couple of tight ends, receiver right and Adrian. Hand off Adrian. Scoots loose up the middle. Across the 30, to the 20, inside the 10. Touchdown!
First down and 10, Johnson. Gets a shoulder square. Watch out! He's got getting away from the top speed. Touchdown!
Welcome in to Grinding the Edge, episode number 51 here on South Harmon. I'm your host, Koopa, and you can find me on X at Dynasty Koopa, and you can find me everywhere else at Koopa Troopa 8. This week, I have a little bit of a different episode for you. I have my first interview here on this podcast. I think it's important to occasionally bring in some other people onto this podcast just to get some different views compared to myself. Grinding the Edge is not about adhering to one strategy, but instead incorporating in bits and pieces from things that you learn and from other people's strategies to make something your own. You want to have a strategy that you both enjoy playing and is one that you know you can execute on. There is not one optimal winning strategy when you are going against 11 other unpredictable humans. Instead, there is a strategy that you can do to play off of them, to be in the best position to take advantage of market inefficiencies that they give you, and be able to do what you want for your team. So with that, let's get into our interview with T-Rock. T-Rock is somebody from the South Harmon team that, if you have been paying attention to the South Harmon website that I've been talking about, you've probably seen some of his articles. Or if you've been looking at the South Harmon Vibes YouTube channel, you've probably seen him on there with his shows with Fizzle on Tuesdays, where he goes through mock drafts and also where he does the cookup. I've been in leagues with T-Rock for quite a few years now, and we've been talking to each other for a very long time. And there's things he does in his leagues that I would never even think of doing. And so that's why I wanted to bring him on here today. So with that, let's get into the interview. All right, T-Rock, so, you know, you and I, the first thing that we kind of bonded over when we met each other at the Fantasy Expo a couple of years ago was our love of food and wine. And yep. We see you go through, and on the cookup, you're putting together all these ginormous spreads, and you and I right now, in honor of the two of us talking to each other, we've both got a glass of wine together. So Tell us, what are you drinking tonight?
So I'm drinking Trader Joe's Grand Reserve Petit Sirah. It comes from Russian River Valley in Sonoma County. And this is a 2022 vintage. It's pretty good. I like Petit Sirah. So when I saw this, I'm like, yeah, I got to go for it. I know the guy, the manager at Trader Joe's. So every time I go on there, he gets me in trouble with my wife because I usually go home with about six bottles. I don't know, but it's really, really good. How about you, man? What are you sipping on?
Yeah, so I've got, it's the Archival 12 from Chateau Morset. I don't know if the listeners know that I live in Southwest Virginia, near the Roanoke area, but it's a local winery that, much like you're saying when you go to Trader Joe's, every time I go there, I end up leaving with a case of wine at a minimum. And this Archival 12 is a 2021. Their archivals, when you talk about Virginia wines, they are much softer because Virginia as a whole, you actually can't produce certain kinds of wine, just like legally they put in those restrictions, kind of like how, if you look at the French and Italian wines, like certain regions, You can't produce certain kinds of wines. And Virginia has that same thing, so you end up not getting these really, really deep reds that you would that you would expect out of a place like California. Like, you think California Cabernet Sauvignon, it's this really deep, high alcohol content, but also just like really tannic wine. Virginia, It's really hard to get that. But what I tend to like is that one that's trying to be that really deep tannic wine and then doesn't get there. And so that is what this Archival 12 ends up being. And so you end up with like a lot of those really dark, those dark fruits, your plums, your currants, like things like that. but you end up not getting that harshness that you get with a lot of your other wines. And so that's what makes an ideal wine for me.
Gotcha. How does it compare to, you know, I'm a big, bold Italian red kind of guy. You know, how does it compare to one of those?
It's honestly not too dissimilar from it. Like, what I would describe it as is take like a standard Chianti, and then if you take all of the mineral that you get in that, because you know how you get that earthy, minerally taste out of those, go through and just start tacking on like all those dark fruits. Like all those things that that are going to be those, I might put that as like a jelly on my cheese board. Like those are the kinds of things that you start putting in there. Mash all that together, and that's what I'm ending up drinking, and that tends to be what I like.
Awesome. I hope that people are enjoying the beginning of this episode, because we absolutely love talking about wine. This is the way that we connected at the expo. Man, there ain't nothing better. There ain't nothing I look more forward to when we get to the expo is sitting outside and drinking some wine with you, man. So I'm happy that you have me here right now and I get to be doing this with you, man.
Yeah. So now that we've successfully indoctrinated everybody into a little bit into the world of wine and the kinds of things that you can talk about, let's get into the thing that, you know, people have already indoctrinated themselves into, and that's our fantasy football. Now, much like how we talk about wine, we have a process that we go through. You get that new wine glass. You're going through. You're swirling it up. You're introducing that oxygen. You're taking that sip. You're going, what does this taste like? What does this remind me of?
Yeah, if you're like me, you stick your big ass nose in it too and get the good sniff in there. Yeah.
You get yourself into fantasy football. And you've got that process that you're going through. You have those things that you start looking at anytime you have to make a decision. Anytime you're looking at a league, a player, all that kind of stuff. What is that thing for you? Like, where do you begin? What are you looking for when you're trying to analyze anything in the fantasy space?
Man, that's a big general question, especially like considering the fact that like, I'm so in the middle of my process right now. It's hard to know where it begins, especially in the dynasty community. It feels like it's just a continual stream of us consuming content, and then also too for us, you know, being able to produce it as well. It's hard for me to know necessarily where I begin. It seems like just continually listening to lots of different people out in the space. So like for me, when it comes to my process, and I think kind of what defines me is more based off of honestly other people. It's not a particular tool or strategy or anything like that. I am who I am because of the people that got me here. So there are tons of people, Coop, that I have to owe, you know, where I got to them. So for me early on, it was Mike Liu, Drew O, Peter Howard, Jake Estes, Ian Miller, Jacob Sanderson, Tags, D-Bro, Scott Connor. I very much gravitated towards the more analytical people in the space. But, you know, as I progressed in my journey, when it comes to, you know, wanting to get better and better and what I can improve upon, the biggest thing that I was lacking was my X's and O's, Coop. So over the last couple of years, I've consumed a lot of content from JT O'Sullivan, Lance Zierlein, Steve Smith Sr., Brett Coleman, EJ Snyder, Hayden Winks, Matt Harmon, Todd McShay, Noah Hills. Those are the guys who were watching film. And by being able to try to learn a little bit from them, it's made me a lot, you know, better at my process too. But honestly, like what really started me on my journey was Nick Arcolano of BDGE. He was the one after I took like a 2 or 3 year hiatus for just from fantasy football in general, because it was just becoming just too much. And I was kind of losing my love for football it was watching his content and being able to connect with him that really got me back into fantasy football. And of course, I kind of, I want to be here without Mike and Adam, who gave me my first start, at South Harmon. So I think having those people, being able to watch them, to see their passion come through, it really gave me something to really look forward to. It gave me a vision. It gave me something that I wanted to be when it came to my process. But then honestly, like my biggest edge, a lot of my process, it comes from people like you, Coop. It comes from people like JCap. You guys have created some of the best tools in the space. And I know that we've talked about this before. Before you came on, I was, calculating warp by hand. It would take me for freaking ever to do that for each and every player on every single one of my teams. So thank God that you came on and you created this tool. And now I can just, with a couple of clicks, figure out what used to take me literally like 2 or 3 days to be able to do for all the teams that I had. But then also too, like, I also love being able to work for one of the best teams, Maddie, EV, DB. And then also too, it's a hell of a community. But I do want to give one special shout out to my main man with the Vibes Channel, Fizz, because he pushes me to be more of myself. And that's the number one thing I'm working on right now. But we can maybe save that for later on. But yeah, it's a lot, man. I can't just give one specific thing. I'm just too much into the process. So for the people out there who are listening, find the people that you gravitate towards that are giving you actionable information that you connect with. What about you, Coop? Are any of those names that I went through, are those people that you have included in your process as well?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you go through the guys from Fantasy Pros, the guys from DLF. You've got your BDGE, South Harmon, the people that are at DD Fantasy. You have so many people that just over time you learn about them, you start listening to their content, and you start mashing it together into your process. But the one thing I struggled with the most, that I'm curious how you have either come over this or if you're still working through it, is when you have all of these different voices, inevitably they're going to start to disagree with each other. At some point, there's something where they have competing strategies, where they just look at how they want to approach different positions differently. How do you determine how those competing ideas are going to influence your process? Do you tend to gravitate towards one specifically, mash them together, create something yourself?
One of the biggest things that I really try to impress upon the people who read my articles and the people who are listening to me is that at the end of the day, you're the one who makes the final decision. So you have to put ownership into your own process. Like I said before, I want to be here without these people, but no one's process looks like my process because, I gravitate towards certain people. I gravitate towards certain metrics. And a part of that is I do look at things like correlation. So I do look at when it comes to certain metrics, and I've been able to refine it over the years, and I try to get better every year, is which of these things that these people are talking about actually correlate to fantasy points and stuff like that and success. So I think that's a big part of it. Not every single thing that a person says is equally weighed. So I try to figure those things out, and it does require a lot of time. Do have to put in the time to see what is worthwhile. But at the end of the day, since you're the one who is, putting in all this time and also the one who's clicking draft or trade or anything like that to fashion those teams, you have to be the one who is happiest with your team at the end of the day. Or the one when you are just click and play on this YouTube content or Spotify or wherever you consume it from, that you are the one that is given those hours and hours of time to it. So I think it's a combination of being able to connect with that person, that they do provide value, that they do, at the end of the day, make you feel more informed and connected with the sport. But also at the same time, too, I want people out there to have more ownership of their own process. Gravitate towards the things that stick out to you more. And for me, it's taken, I've been doing my rookie process is probably my most involved one since 2021. And it looks completely different in 2025 than it did in 2021. It's changed a lot over every year. And the biggest thing recently has been watching film. Because I realized, like, you can't just put in numbers and just be a completely only analytics guy and stuff like that. So I think the biggest thing you have to do is take an audit of your system at the end of every year, see what worked and see what didn't, and be open about it. And look for the people who, you know, are stronger at your biggest weaknesses. So hopefully I answered your question, but yeah, it's a lot. There's a lot that goes into all of this, but it is hard to know like which one is, I don't know, more effective than the other. But at the end of the day, it has to be your own process. I think that's the biggest thing.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out a little bit to some of the people over at the Superflex Super Show Discord, because I was just having a conversation with some people over there literally this morning about how your process needs to be owned by you. And you can't just blindly follow a content creator. You can't follow a single person. And you have to have your own process that is unique to you, unique to what it is that you do as both an individual, as a dynasty manager, or even just like stuff from your real life. And so for me, that is my day job is I am a programmer. So that's how I've been able to make the tools that I make. That's why I have the data that I have, why I have all of these things, because I know I can go and code that up. And when I have a question, I'm like, well, what does the average manager do? Or more specifically, I like to focus in, what does the winning manager do? And I want to make my process based on that. So I'm curious with you, T-Rock, what is it, anything that you have in your life outside of fantasy football that you see bleed over into your fantasy football process?
This goes back to my dude Fizz, who's pushing me to be more of myself, honestly, when it comes to the message and the vision I want to get across to my audience. I think we can, as a community, just be very much overwhelmed with data, very much overwhelmed with analytics and statistics. And honestly, what's missing at the end of the day, when it comes to what we ultimately want to do, which is connect to other people over this sport that we absolutely love with football, is the whole idea of just being more of myself. And I think, you know, when I look at my past and having come from, you know, a medical field background that I was in for 8 years, and I was a researcher and writer for a healthcare startup. This was during COVID, where so much data and research was coming out very, very, it was literally changing by the day. And just during that time, I realized how quickly you had to be able to move, but then also too, how important it was to be able to weigh which information was more important than the other, because I think that's very, very critical, even in our space too, where it's like, you have all this information. What is going to be the thing that matters the most at the end of the day that's going to bring about the best outcome? So being able to, you know, do an insane amount of research to be able to write two different NIH grants. So if anyone who knows how much work gets put into those, it's an insane amount. Hospitals have whole different departments that are dedicated to that. And I did two in 6 months by myself. So that was one hell of an experience. It pushed me to be able to be like, all right, there is really nothing as far as data goes that's going to be too big for me. And the crazy thing is, I'm not like you, Coop, where I could put in algorithms and use data analytics and then go through thousands of lines of code and be able to compute all of that. I have to do all that shit by hand. It is very, very tough, but I do become very acclimated with the data and stuff like that. But getting back to what I was saying about, you know, with what we're trying to accomplish on the Vibes channel and just being able to, for me, I am trying to be somebody who does not only connect with Fizz and try to capture, you know, those moments that we have at the expo, the moments that I have with you at the expo, where we're able just to talk about our favorite things about the sport and what we love about it. But then also too, being able to connect with the audience. I think one of the biggest things that I've seen where I feel the most, I can't think of the word for it right now, but I feel very much called to be able to help people, and especially in one-on-one settings. So being able to talk to people about their rosters, about their process, about their strategy, and be able to have more of a back and forth in a conversation and asking them, well, why do you do this? Why do you do that? And when you ask those whys, you can be able to build within somebody their own process, their own way of looking at everything. But yeah, I think that's been like the biggest thing for me that I want to be like in this space, is somebody that connects with somebody on a one-on-one level and is able just to give them that wisdom. And that wisdom only comes through, you know, experience and stuff like that, but be able to boil things down for them in a way that's not only simpler in an age that is getting more complicated, more data driven and stuff like that, but also too, to get back to like, why are you doing this in the first place? Are you doing this just to win? Or are you doing this also for enjoyment as well? That's the thing. I don't know if you're like me, Coop, but the longer we're in the space, the longer it can feel like there's a lot more work, the more difficult it can get, the more analytics there are. And it's just like, sometimes we just need to be able to take a, you know, a pause and remind ourselves, what is this all about? Am I losing my love for this? But I don't know if you feel that way, you know, operating in this space.
I think that's something that anybody, no matter what hobby or job or anything, you go through these periods where if you're doing it every single day, day in and day out, you hit a certain point of burnout. And it's all about preventing that burnout from hitting you hard enough that you lose your love for that thing that you're doing. The people tend not to leave jobs unless they're feeling like that it's just too much work for them and they do not enjoy going into the office, getting online with their coworkers, whatever kind of job it is. If you don't have that enjoyment, you are going to be like, I need to switch. I need to do something different. And the same thing goes with fantasy. When you're talking fantasy football, if you do that every single day and you do that where as soon as the fantasy season ends at the end of week 17, and you are immediately into, all right, these are all the new off-season values, these are all the moves that I need to make, all those sorts of things immediately. Yes, you're putting yourself at an edge over the other people that are not doing that, but you need to make sure that you also are not pushing yourself too much over your own mental just love for the game. Because in reality, the difference between you going through all your teams at the beginning of January versus the beginning of February, you are not really going to have that much of an advantage. There's no news that comes out in that time period, except for new head coaches. And there's nothing in that time period. A lot of your leagues probably have trades shut down or waivers shut down while they're figuring out, okay, who's leaving this league, getting new managers in, things like that. And so there's not a huge advantage to doing that. But the mental toll that it takes for doing fantasy football year-round, every single day, consistently, versus taking that month off versus taking a little bit of time to just be able to enjoy playoff football. The whole point of the playoffs in football is it's the best teams against the best teams. And you know what that breeds? Amazing football games. So go and just enjoy amazing football games that you are not stressing about your teams while they're going on. And when you are going to look at, okay, now I'm going to step back into fantasy at the end of that, you're going to feel more refreshed. You're going to feel ready to actually tackle those sorts of things, and it's not going to be that continuous grind.
Yeah. I'm pouring myself some more wine. I'm realizing you just a couple, 20 minutes into the show, I'm being a little bit stiff. I don't know why it is sometimes. I'm just nervous sometimes. So I thank God we're drinking this wine. But the more that I think about just this question and just the other areas of my life and wanting to look as, harmonious as possible and not too, complicated word, compartmentalized. Damn, that was good. For me, used to be in healthcare, where you used to be able to help people when they're at their worst moments. Before that, I was pursuing law enforcement. I had a degree in criminology from Ohio State. I wanted to be a U.S. Marshal. They had the most badass jobs. They're basically just glorified bounty hunters and stuff like that. I wanted to be on Con Air. But going from that, going into healthcare, I was in construction for a hot minute because I wanted to be the next Chip and Joanna Gaines. But that didn't work out. I got laid off from that. But during that time, I got my start with South Harmon. Thank God for Mike and Adam being able to do that for me, because I wanted to be able to continue to help people and get out my love for fantasy football and share that with the people. But also, too, right now, being in culinary, which is my ultimate dream job, this is what I believe I'm going to be doing. When I die and go to heaven, I want to be cooking for people up there. Being able to serve people in that regard, being able to serve people and make them feel, loved and valued, that is my ultimate vision that I want to be able to do in this space. I've only been able to do a few shows with Fizz. I keep trying to get better and better every single time. But ultimately, that is the thing I want to have bleed over the most when it comes to my content. When people read my articles, when people see me on YouTube or they listen to me, what I ultimately want to be able to communicate is like that I am there to be able to serve them, to be able to connect with them, to be able to pass on what I have learned. But at the end of the day, to make them feel valued and also to have a damn good time. And I feel like the best way, the most universal way, even more so than football, is through food. So that is the way that I connect with people. So that is my ultimate vision of trying to be able to take what I have learned and being able to connect with people in that way and somehow figure it out. What can I take from those elements there to be able to bring over in this space over here? It's hard. Yeah. I haven't figured it all out.
And it's one of those things. I think there is no anybody who's out there that thinks they have it all figured out, I think is going to be wrong, because at some point things are going to change, whether that's in a week or whether that's in a couple years from now. Things will be different. The world is going to change around you, and you need to change what you're doing around that. And so whether it's content creation, whether it's fantasy, whether it's your career or anything else, just in life in general, everything changes. And expecting the world to statically be the same around you is a setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah, I think adaptability has to be one of the biggest things, especially it doesn't matter what sector or space that you're in. That has to be one of the biggest things. Because if you stay stagnant, if I still had the same rookie process I did from 2021, man, I would have missed out on a lot of different things. It does get more competitive. I really connected with one of your latest shows where you talked about how much smarter the space is getting. I absolutely think that that's true. So in order to maintain your edge, you do have to be a little bit ahead of the curve. But that was a big reason thing, you know, a big reason for me. And Fitz had to remind me of this, you know, with our show, where it's just like, I want to, in order to get more viewers to be able to provide that value, I feel obligated to be smarter, more analytically driven than, you know, the best people out there, or else why would people want to watch me? And him and my wife are like, man, you just need to be more yourself. And it's just like, it's just a back and forth of being able to be genuine, to be real, to be able to connect with the audience the same way that we are able to connect with one another, just talking with one another, but then also be able to provide, you know, that value and stuff like that. It's hard. I still haven't figured it out, but that's the dilemma I'm going through right now, Coop.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that you're never going to have a full answer for. You can get most of the way there, but
damn,
not all the
Coop,
way there.
I was kind of hoping you'd say, just give it some time. You'll figure it out.
But you can always feel better about it. You can always feel better about yourself, but nobody's perfect. And then when you can embrace that you don't have to be perfect, you can just be good. That is the kind of thing that once you can embrace that philosophy, then you can go on and be happy with what you're doing and not be stagnant as well. Embrace the fact that you have stuff to work on, but it's not a problem that you have stuff to work on.
Well, I appreciate that. And between those kind words and this wine, I feel pretty good right now. How are you feeling right now?
I'm doing good over here. And I'm thinking, well, we got to turn this back into fantasy.
Yeah, right? It's gotten kind of emotional and stuff like that here recently.
we've gotten some big picture stuff. Yeah. I want to dive into a little bit of, you've been talking about through all of that, like you're trying to get better. You're trying mm-hmm. to understand things that you have not understood before. And not all of it are things that you can make for yourself. So what kinds of stuff are you out there using? And I'd like to focus this a little bit more on not just the stuff that we have here at South Harmon. Like if you've listened to this podcast, you know about the Warp Tool. I've mentioned the lab a few times. And we've got the tools on the South Harmon website. But mm-hmm. what other data are you going out there pulling into your process? Who else in the space are you paying attention to?
So I already mentioned as far as the people in the space goes. But if you want to know what my Google Chrome tab looks like, where I have all the different resources, I'll go through it very quickly. So I do have South Harmon. I do have the JCAPS, the lab. I do have your Warp Tool up. I have all those things up all the time. After that, I do have Keep Trade Cut up. And then I have also two. We have access to the game statistics and information system from the NFL GSIS, which is very, very helpful as well. I do have Fantasy Pros up, Next Gen Stats. I have three different PFF tabs that are open. I have the data suite from Fantasy Points, and then I have Player Profiler, Sports Reference, ESPN, and then the last one I have is College Football Network, which I utilize for miles per hour. So those are the ones that I continuously have up, and I'm always utilizing whenever it comes to anything I want to research, anything I want to write about. And all those tabs, that is what, you know, I mainly utilize for when it comes to my rookie process or the different positional, what is it called, research that I do for quarterbacks, running backs, tight ends, and wide receivers. So that is a little sneak peek into my process. And also, too, you know, whenever I do write any of my articles and I do use any of these pieces of information, I always make sure to be able to, you know, give the proper references for that. I think that's very, very important because I didn't work for this information. So I'm just going out and finding it. And I think it's important that people know where you get your information from.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things that is a fantasy space as a whole. The best people are not the ones that just take everything for themselves. They're the ones that lift up everybody else around them. And being able to say, hey, I'm using this data here or that data there, those are the kinds of things that we can all learn from. Like I know that in my process, I do not use the Fantasy Points data suite very well. Like I know it exists, and every once in a while I'll go and pull it up because I'm like, oh yeah, I have access to this thing. Like I have the subscription for it where I can go in and use it, but I don't use it very often. And remembering that, okay, I need to use this, pull it into my process, actually learn what does this data mean? Like everybody that's out there who's listened to this podcast, who's like, hey, I don't use Warp that much. It's the same thing. You have to go sit down, put in the reps, and understand just what is this data telling me? And whether you learn that by practicing it yourself, whether it's listening to other content creators that are using that same data, in general, everybody understanding, hey, who has this data out there and who does it really well? Because I will talk all day about my Warp tool, and I know there are different versions out there, and I will mention that from time to time. But the important thing is that you understand how to use them. If you use somebody else's Warp tool, like, sure, mine is going to be slightly different. If you're ever asking me a question, I'm pulling it up on mine and giving you the results from there. But I'm not going to fault you for being more comfortable with another one because you've used that one more. You're more familiar with the exact data that it outputs, those sorts of things. Because in the fantasy space, we're all collaborative. We're all trying to lift everyone up together.
Do
And it
you
kind of
do
goes back to that everybody getting smarter kind of thing, of everybody needs to get, it is getting smarter as a group. And so we all should be here helping each other out with that process.
Absolutely. Do you find yourself, when it comes to your work, what you spend the most time on is basically filling in the voids or the cracks in between all the other data that you compile from? Because if there's somebody like Debra, I think is a very great example, who has amazing like rankings out there and stuff like that, I'm not going to necessarily go too much out of my way, or at least I'm going to very much utilize it. Yeah, I think he's the best in the space at doing a particular thing. I'm going to pull a lot of my process for that particular thing I'm looking for from that person. Do you find yourself doing that? Because I feel like when it comes to my main thing with my rookie process, since there is so many different opinions out there, since there are so many different takes between people who either do film or do analytics and stuff like that, I feel like my process is mainly all the things that I don't find out in the space. Otherwise, why would I need to put in all that time to be able to do it? I want to be able to use my time to fill in those voids, to fill in those cracks, like I said earlier.
It's 100%
Yeah.
that I focus on. I mean,
Yeah.
it anybody here at South Harmon that's been around for a while knows that I do not put my rankings on the South Harmon rankings page anymore. And the reason for that is just because I don't have them. Like it what I was doing every time I would go and it update the South Harmon rankings is I would go through and I'd be like, all right, I need to sit down. What should I do? I need to base these off of something just to get myself started here. And I'd go to somebody else's rankings, copy paste them in, and then go, oh, I don't like how low they are on this player, so let me move them up a couple spots. And oh, and I think this player's too high, let me move them down a couple spots. And I'd do that through all the positions, and then that was it. And it's like that wasn't rankings. That wasn't It wasn't my rankings. It was a set of rankings that's out there that, sure, you could look at. But I realized that in my own process, I wasn't using my own rankings. I had them up on the South Harmon website that anybody could look at. And if you sent me a trade offer, I wasn't paying attention to, do I have this guy ranked as my wide receiver 24 or my wide receiver 28? Or are they in my tier 2 or my tier 3? Like, no, I was going and looking at either the South Harmon staff aggregate or the Fantasy Pros expert consensus rankings or some other ranking system out there. And I was basing my decisions off of just glancing at all of those, seeing what the player looked like between all of them, and making a decision off of that. And that decision being, do I like the tier that player is in? Do I like where they are in comparison to the corresponding player at a different position? And because I play in such a variety of leagues, I'd be like, okay, I'm trying to compare, let's say this wide receiver 24 is equivalent to this running back 18. Well, if I'm evaluating a trade, I'm looking at, okay, I have wide receiver 24 and running back 18, so those two can go cancel out. So, but my process was such that I didn't care who the player was. And you hear that come up a lot in my podcast. I talk about how I don't care who the player is individually. I don't pay attention to those sorts of things. I have my biases towards certain players. I will put players in different categories just in terms of an initial, like, oh, I think that there's a lot of uncertainty about this player, and that's what's driving his costs down. But if he hits, he's going to be in this tier. And so I'm going to value him closer to that tier because I prefer to embrace uncertainty. But that's focusing in on a individual player of, oh, they will bump up a tier, and not so much on, oh, I should slot them in this spot in the rankings and I need to have that decision made set in stone where I say, oh, a great example right now, Anthony Richardson. It's really hard for a lot of people to rank Anthony Richardson because it's the uncertainty of how long will he last as the Colts starting quarterback. I am probably higher on Anthony Richardson than a lot of people because I'm like, well, if he does succeed as the Colts starting quarterback this year, he's going to be great for fantasy. We've seen that every time he starts. And if he doesn't succeed, that's what people are hedging their bets against. That's why he's valued lower. But on the flip side, I'm also making the same bet of, well, Daniel Jones, if Anthony Richardson is bad, Daniel Jones has this opportunity to succeed. And what have we seen in the past? He rushes a lot, just like Anthony Richardson does. And he'll be in an offense designed around that rushing quarterback. When he was in New York, he did really well from a fantasy perspective compared to how he actually performed on the field. If he can perform well on the field in Indianapolis, all of a sudden, he's a really, really solid high-end quarterback. And so I'm probably higher on both of those quarterbacks than other people are because I'm willing to embrace that variance. I'm willing to say, I don't care whether they're going to have the starting job or not. If it succeeds, that is going to be the thing that I want. And so same thing with last year with Jaden Daniels. Mike talked about how he wanted to have Jaden Daniels as his 101 because of the potential that he can vault himself into potentially being the number one dynasty asset. And I was the same way. I was right there on board with him. I wanted to take the risk of Jaden Daniels over Caleb Williams because I wanted the absolute number one dynasty asset. Sure, Caleb Williams probably had that higher floor. We knew that he was going to stick around as the Bears starting quarterback no matter what he did for probably at least 2 years, if not three. But Jaden Daniels had the ability to vault past literally anyone else in the dynasty space and be the potential quarterback one, not just quarterback one, number one overall player. And so that's the kind of bet that I like to take. I like the go big or go home. And so that bleeds into my process like that.
Yeah, and you bring up just a learning moment for me from last year and just from years past where, you know, in my process through my rookie research, I had Jaden Daniels and Drake May. They scored higher than Caleb Williams, who I had at 3. But being somebody who is like, well, you know, I could be wrong on this, and everyone else seems to have Caleb Williams at 101, I shouldn't go against ADP or consensus. So I'm going to go against my own process that I put all this freaking time into, and I'm going to go with Caleb Williams over Jaden Daniels and Drake May, and look where we're at right now. Now, that could very much change, and that just comes back to just in this sport that we follow, that we spent all this time in, you have to be adaptable and you have to be able to change. It truly is a market. When people say that, it truly is a market, and you have to be willing to go along with it and be able to change as it goes. I think that's the one thing, if we want to talk about pet peeves in this space and stuff like that, it's the lack of acknowledgement of how things change. And people should be less harsh towards other people when it comes to their views, because they may be on that bandwagon 6 months after that. But then also they should be willing to accept, hey, like that may change back to where I thought it was originally going to be after that later on. I think that's just one of the things that we need to be able to just showcase, or it's just like, it's adaptability. It's things that change. And that's the biggest thing for me, that when it comes to my process, is during this time of the year, during the off season, there is very little that I'm doing right now, because I have seen that the biggest thing, the biggest piece of information that's going to dictate everything is after the first 4 to 6 weeks of the season. So, you know, I really do appreciate and I love that you keep talking about the purpose of the warp tool is not to be predictive. That was probably my favorite thing that you said, you know, during that show, because a lot of people can look at a tool like the warp tool and be like, oh, because this is what happened last year, this is going to be predictive of next year. That isn't the case. You have to be able to put in the work each and every year, and you have to look for things in certain windows of time in order to be able to help you with that. That's why during the offseason, I'm not trading for players that can get hurt whatsoever. That's completely eliminated from my process. And I'm waiting until the first 4 to 6 weeks to see who are the players who are playing at their very best. And that's why when I release my, you know, my quarterback buys, my wide receiver buys, all those different positions, they come at that point of the season when we have the data that we need for that particular year to be able to make the best informed decision for being able to win your championship that year. But yeah, I think that's just one of the things that I look at. You have to continually, you know, be consuming, hearing all this information as it comes in, and be adaptable. So I think you being more agnostic when it comes to the players, I think that that is very, very helpful. I'm taking a completely different approach this year. I am, you know, with all the analytics, all the data and stuff like that, at the end of the day, a lot of times it just comes down to who you really love and appreciate when it comes to watching the game. So whatever your strength is, whatever you gravitate more towards, I'm more analytically based. I'm trying to push myself to be more somebody that just loves and appreciates the game, who has my guys and stuff like that. Those are the things that I'm working on this upcoming year, and who I want to be, you know, just when it comes to being a fantasy football player. Focus on the things that you're weakest at. That's probably the best way to get better at this game.
Yeah, and I think that's something that everybody can take away from this, is focus on what you're good at, and then focus on filling in the gaps where you know you aren't as good. That's how you improve. But don't ever lose track of what that thing that makes you good is, because if you try to drop that out of your process, you're putting yourself on the back foot. So one last thing I want to ask you about is the thing that I know you the most for in your process is the auto accept trade block, and specifically the prices that you put on the auto accept trade block. Mike has talked about this so many times on AMA, and every time I look at your auto accept trade blocks, I always look at it and I'm like, T-Rock is delusional. Where are these prices coming from? Because every player that you put on, like, it's that kind of idea of, you know how you go to try to trade from that other manager and they value their player higher simply because they're on your team? That's the kind of thing that I view your auto accept trade blocks as. And I'm curious for you and how you do it. You go through, you do the work of putting this auto accept trade block out. And I'm sure you know your prices are higher than what consensus is. Is there a reason behind that? Are you trying to fish for that person that is overshooting? Or are you just saying, I'm going to put these prices out there. I'm not trying to make moves. Or is it something else entirely?
So one of the biggest banes of my existence, honestly, is when Scott Connor and Evie came out with, I feel like they're the ones that pioneered the term auto accept trade block. I didn't subscribe to that. I feel like when I put my prices out there, it's not specifically to be an auto accept trade block. For me, when I put those prices out there, I think of it in real estate terms. This is a listing price. That means that I have the ability to say no if I don't want to actually trade them. Or I could also say, yes, I do want to, trade that person for that price that I have out there. People, when they look at it, like freaking grocery prices and stuff like that. So if you have on there, that exact same price, they think that they can come in there and ask for it. Here's the thing. I never ask for the 105 or 106. What I usually ask for is the 2025 first. And you know what inevitably happens? People, instead of sending their 103 or 104, which is, actually what the market price would be, they send their 111 and 112. So just so you know, I've completely changed my process because of all the bullshit that I have to deal with now. So with me creating, I've created a new ranking system and tier system where I have players ranked from favorite to love, really like, appreciate, indifferent, and don't like. Those are players I'm just never going to have any of my teams and stuff like that. And you know what I'm doing to save myself some heartache and some wasted time going back and forth with people, which I'm not doing anymore. I'm not going back and forth with people anymore. If a player is on my favorite list, if a player is on my love list, guess what, Coop? I'm not putting them on the trade block anymore because I'm tired of going back and forth with people finagling them with it. If they want one of those people, I'm just going to tell them, you send the best offer that you yourself would be willing to accept for it. And I'm not going to even bother, replying back to them. It's on their terms at that point right now. Now, when it comes to players that I really like or appreciate and stuff like that, then I'm going to go to KTC. I'm going to look at where they are in the rankings. I'm not going to use the trade calculator. Guys, don't use any type of tool if you don't necessarily know how it works and how they get those values. So I don't know how they come up with those numbers and stuff like that. But for me, if a wide receiver is in maybe my appreciative tier and they're like, say, the wide receiver one or the wide receiver six, I know in my head that is worth 2 plus firsts to 3 firsts. And then a wide receiver that's 7 to 12 is like 2 firsts. And then so on and so forth from like the 13 to 18, that's like a first plus a second or something like that. You just keep going down the way right there. But for me, with changing my process to go more towards my affinity for a player, I'm just not going to bother wasting time putting players on the trade block that I really love and don't want to get rid of. And then for those other ones that are in those lower tiers for me, I'm just going to go to KTC, and that's the tier price that I'm going to be able to give for players right now. So I hope that I, by being able to do that, I'm able to spare you from a lot of heartache and from a lot of like, what the hell is T-Rock doing asking for this extra stuff? But here's the thing. If I'm going to sell one of these players, there's only one of those players out there, Coop. There's only one Lamar Jackson. There's only one Jaden Daniels. So you better believe that I'm going to ask for maybe just a tiny bit more than what they ask for and stuff like that. I think it's called in South Harmony, you always ask for that extra third, just to be able to get that little cherry on top.
Yeah, it's the I have this guy and you want him tax is what you're asking for.
Exactly.
And I can also understand, especially for the guys that you like. Like, I have realized that I have extremely high player shares of Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson, and Jaden Daniels. Those four, in terms of, if you look at my percentage, I think those are my four highest owned quarterbacks that are actually starters. I have some backups in like an absurd number of leagues, but they don't really count. And I have those four guys partially just because I like them. Like, sure, my strategy plays into the fact that having those four quarterbacks, they do really well for fantasy purposes. But outside of fantasy, when I'm watching it on Sunday and you see Lamar Jackson get flushed out of the pocket and he's going to his right side, and you're like, there's a 50-50 chance that that ball flies out of his hand, goes 30 yards downfield to some wide receiver that I can't see on my screen right now, and he catches it for 30-yard gain, or he does a pump fake, and then he runs past three defenders, and he uses his legs and gets 20 yards off of it. Like, that's just an exciting player to watch. And I want to be able to see that and be like, not only did I enjoy watching that as a lover of football, I enjoyed watching that as a Ravens fan. I also enjoyed watching that because I know that he's on a bunch of my fantasy teams. Like, you just win all around when you have something like that. And I think it's always important to keep those things in perspective as well, and not put yourself into a hole where, you know, you have the players on your fantasy teams that you don't like to watch on Sundays. Because it makes that Sunday watching experience much harder on you.
Yeah, I think also, too, like, I've just dealt with so much trade remorse and stuff like that. I don't really deal with it now. I think being more knowledgeable of the game, you know, having played more and stuff like that, like, there are very rarely trades now where I'm like, man, like, I feel bad. I could have gotten more and stuff like that. At the end of the day, you have to be happy with the trade that you execute and stuff like that. But for me, my biggest problem, just going back to it, freaking Scott Connor, man, I have not subscribed to, you know, that point of view and stuff like that. A lot of people, they may do similar looking things, but it may not be the exact same way. This ain't a freaking grocery store where you can just be like, well, you did say, you know, 2025 first. It wasn't specific. Guys, I'm in so many different leagues. I'm trying to do this as quickly as possible. And I would like there to be a little bit of good faith and back and forth. You know, you can't just be like, if I wrote first, then you're just going to be like, well, here's a 2027 first. You have to take it. I don't have to do shit. So that's just the biggest thing that I just do not really like that's happening in the space right now, where it's people are getting lazy and they're treating people unlike how they would want to be treated. So you know what happens to me when somebody does that to me? They are not on my preferable trade partner list. I don't know if you have that, Coop. You are definitely on my trade preferable list. I have to do very little back and forth with you whatsoever. There's no ill will. It's straight business. I absolutely love it. People need to care more about their persona and their reputation when it comes to their trading. So I've probably built some bad reputation. But here's the thing. I don't know any other leagues where I'm not in the top two when it comes to trading. So all the shit that people want to give me for acting like this, they certainly like to trade with me quite a bit. So there's a little bit back and forth. But yeah, I'm trying to be better at what it is, you know, when it comes to trading every year. This wine is starting to hit me. So I'm going to stop talking right now.
No, what I was about to give you, to close out the show here, we talked about lots of good stuff. I want to give you 60 seconds. The floor is yours. I want to hear the rant that you have on that thing that annoys you. And I don't care whether it's fantasy. I don't care whether it's something else entirely. 60 seconds. The floor is yours to just tell us about that thing that gives you the heebie-jeebies, it's that pet peeve. It's that kind of thing that you just need people to hear about why it needs to be different and why you don't like it.
Man, that's kind of tough because I feel like I got a lot of my good rants out of the way already. But I think for me personally, the biggest message that I try to get across to people is, you know, when you're going to put all this time into listening to all this content, maybe doing your own rankings and stuff like that, knowing the reason why, make sure that it is worthwhile, that it doesn't just feel, you know, like a job and stuff like that. And when you are consuming content from other people, it's just like, I consume all the content that I do because they bring a value to me. They are somebody who I do connect with. And it's not just somebody who I think, oh, it's going to help me win and stuff like that. But I think at the end of the day, if there is one thing that I really want people to be able to do and what I want to be able to do and try to lead in that regard, and I really appreciate that Mike and Adam do, they have an episode at the end of the year where they talk about their biggest misses and stuff like that. I want that to be more of a continual thing, you know? So like on one of the latest episodes, I thought that Aaron Rodgers was going to be a shoo-in to be the Vikings quarterback. Man, was I wrong when Ian Rappaport came out with that the very next day and stuff like that. So we have to be humble when it comes to our process. And I think people are able to connect with us more when they understand and know, hey, these are the reasons why I believed in this thing, but we have to pivot from this. So we have to be able to acknowledge our weaknesses. We have to be able to acknowledge the things that we got wrong and our mistakes. But at the end of the day, the thing that I want to be able to do myself, that Fizz does so well, that Mike and Adam do so well, everyone at South Harmon does very well, and some of my favorite people do at a very masterful level, is be able to be themselves and connect with other people, where it's not just all one thing with film or one thing with analytics or whatever you want to call it. It's them being themselves and being able to connect with other people. I think that's the only way, Coop, that you survive in this space, that you are able to have your passion come through and connect with other people. So that's the number one thing that I look for and that I really appreciate about so many, you know, the amazing people in this space, man. And I appreciate that about you too, being able to connect with you, you know, not just during this time, but throughout the time that we've been a part of South Harmon, to be able to be at the expo, being able to drink wine. That's what it's all about, man. So I hope that I can get to do that with as many people as I possibly can while I'm here on this earth, man. Make every day count. Be able to take that love and that kindness and try to help other people to be able to do that for other people, man.
Yeah, and in true the two of us talking together fashion, you know, where we talk, we say we're going to end at midnight. And then we're done at 1:30 a.m. And then we're really done at 2:30 a.m. Those 60 seconds were a good 3 minutes long for us here. But I think those were a valuable 3 minutes for everybody's time as well.
I appreciate that. I felt like I was in the time warp. It's time to sometimes just when you go on those little rants, they kind of change. So I apologize for that. I'll be better. That's one area I can be better at, is concise.
I think everybody here at South Harmon, we like to poke fun at Eric for how long America's Game goes on. One of my favorite things is when he starts a podcast with, "All right, we're gonna try to keep this episode to under an hour and a half." And I'm looking at the time remaining on the episode, and it's got that 2 hours 45 minutes remaining. I'm like, well. Yet another America's Game that never came close to hitting the estimated time target. It's one of those things where you're talking and you can just go on forever.
Yeah, me and Fizz are having a tough time too. We're getting a little bit better. You know, we went from the first mock-up we did from 2 hours and 20 minutes to 1:45 or something like that. So it just takes a little bit of progress. But you know what? I didn't want to rush this time with you. I absolutely love being able to spend this time with you. So I hope that people are able to get something out of this and appreciate it. I thought, you know, we're at 102 right now. That's pretty good. I'm pretty proud of us, man.
Yeah. Speaking of you and Fizz, I want to give you a little bit here. Just tell the audience that's maybe not as familiar with you where it is that they can find all your stuff.
Yeah, so you can find my work at SouthHarmonFF.com. I'm one of the writers, you know, to be able to publish articles there. So if you want to know a lot more about my process, the way I do things, I give it all to you guys there. So you just have to sign up, put your email in, and you can get all my work for free, exactly how I do my whole process. So you can go there for my articles. You can tune in on YouTube through the South Harmon Vibes channel. I'm very blessed to be able to do the cook-up show with Fizz at 10 a.m. on Tuesday mornings. And then the last couple of weeks, it's been really, really great being able to do the mock-ups with the community on Tuesday nights. So you can check us out there. And then those are the two main places that I'm at. And then you can check me out on Twitter at TRock5220.
Yeah, I think that's great. Go check T-Rock out. I mean, he's got all sorts of amazing stuff. The day of us recording this episode, he just released a new article on the South Harmon website. And I think an important thing that T-Rock does is he releases those articles when he's ready to release them. They aren't rushed. They are not... he has to hit one every single week in order to hit some arbitrary deadline, so you know every single one of them is going to be good. And they all come with that special flair by the time I'm getting towards the end of the season, I'm going through my waiver wire process, and it's like, man, I am being that secret agent trying to figure out who it is that I want to add to my team, because you just get that feeling every time you're going through and reading one of them.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I that's the initial mindset I went in. That's why I call my series, my ongoing series, The Dossier. I want people to feel like, hey, this is the best, most secretive information you got. This is what's going to help you with your mission of being a better fantasy football player. So I do appreciate that. And yeah, I did release the first article of my series that I'm going to do all about attacking the draft. So I'm going to talk about the trade back chart. I'm going to talk about auction drafts, which is our favorite, you know, way to draft and stuff like that. So be able to tune in. I came with the first one today on the snake draft style startups.
Yeah, so definitely go check T-Rock out at SouthHarmonFF.com, on the South Harmon Vibes channel, and then also at T-Rock5220. So that's everything that I have for you this week. As always, stay sharp and keep grinding that edge, and I'll be back with you next week.